35.
She's a TV star, a Broadway star, a best-selling author, a wife, and a mom. She's gifted with the memory of a superhero and the energy of a teenager. Now, here's Mary Lou Henner.
I'm Mary Lou, along with Lauren Henner and Brianna Jane, and we're so glad that you're here. Can you imagine being kind of in contact with your ancestors? Imagine a long time ago before Facebook and things like that, being able to actually get to know your relatives through the letters they've written, the photographs that were taken, and really connecting with them in a very special way. I mean, Lauren and I are brother and sister, and we don't even know what our grandmothers look like. There's no photograph of them, and we don't even know what they look like. And they came over from Greece and from Poland, but they died when our parents were very, very young, of like 7 and 8 years old. Well, you're going to get to meet a fabulous woman by the name of Mary Jo Sontag, and she has written this amazing book, Right If You Live to Get There. And it's all about, it's about connecting with your ancestors through the letters that they've written and the research that is part of them. I mean, it's just amazing. It's like she knows about the letters her ancestors wrote to each other from Pennsylvania and Vermont to California and places in between. And she's got this amazing book that she's going to share with you. And I cannot wait to talk to her, because I can't even fathom it. I can't even imagine what it would be like to connect with our ancestors through photographs, through letters. And it's funny because my husband, Michael, he was raised in Salt Lake City. So he has unbelievable photographs from the 1800s and knows everything about his relatives. But we know nothing. That's why I want to go on Lisa Kudrow's show, Who Do You Think You Are? Because we'd find out so much about it, because so many things were lost. Well, she's going to give us a kind of a strategy and this whole way of connecting with people from your past in terms of what they've left behind. And for you to be able to do that will tell such a complete story, and you can start to make connections and understand what's in your DNA and the different ways that they've lived and what they ate and how they traveled. And it's just a really fascinating study. So I cannot wait to talk to her, and I'm so excited to be sharing her with you today. So Mary Jo Sontag, researcher and co-author of Right If You Live to Get There. She also obviously has a sense of humor, because it's really funny, and it must be a lot of stuff people went through. So you don't want to miss this. Mary Jo Sontag, next.
His hair was falling out in clumps.
Our golden retriever, Sundance, scratched incessantly.
Mounds and mounds of fur all over the place.
Our hairballs have hairballs.
Olive was suffering like a dog. She was itching, she was scratching, she was licking 24 hours a day.
Just chewing and chewing and chewing.
Scratching and biting.
Buddy, my Shih Tzu's itching problem, constantly licking his feet. It keeps me up at night.
And all it took was one container of Dinovite.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa,
the digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
The shedding slowed down to almost none. The scratching went away after a few days.
Tons of energy, no more bad smell.
The shedding has stopped and the itching has stopped.
Sleep at night. Oh, let me do it again. Sleep at night. Get your dog some Dinovite.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
This eczema is driving me crazy. All I do is, no matter what I use on this dry, itchy, red skin, I can't stop.
Introducing the first eczema lotion from Cortisone 10. It contains the strongest non-prescription itch medicine to relieve the, plus 7 moisturizers to help heal severe dry skin. Once you start using it, you'll stop the for good.
Ah, that's better.
New Cortisone 10 Eczema Lotion. Feel the heal.
Young people everywhere are making a difference.
Special Olympics has changed my life so dramatically.
It's helped me a lot to be fearless, you know, in the real world.
My friends I've made through Special Olympics are the best people I've ever met in my life.
I truly realize that what I'm doing is for a great cause.
And it's not about disabilities, but it's about celebrating their abilities.
I've made a difference.
Now it's your turn to make a difference.
Get involved at SpecialOlympics.org.
You're listening to The Mary Lou Henner Show.
I'm Mary Lou, along with Lauren Henner and Brianna Jane. Okay, let me ask you something. Did you ever wonder what it's like in the 18th and the 19th and the early 20th centuries? I mean, wouldn't you love to get a peek into the lives of the people who actually lived during this time, the whole settling of our country, etc.? Well, today you're going to get it because we have with us author Mary Jo Sontag, who wrote this amazing book called Right If You Live to Get There. So obviously a great sense of humor. And she's going to give you a breathtaking glimpse into the lives of those who lived during these trying times and what it felt like to ride in wagons and walk the earth with them. So please give a nice, warm Mary Lou Henner Show welcome to Mary Jo Sontag. Hi there.
Hi, Mary Lou.
Hi. So how did this book come about? It's fascinating. I was constantly reading it in between, you know, setups and stuff today. So tell me how it all came about.
Well, when her mother died in 1962, my mom inherited a white wooden chest that was filled with letters, photographs, and memorabilia dating back to 1842. She put that chest on the shelf in her bedroom closet while she raised her family. And then in 1992, I had a chance to go on a business trip to Sacramento and took a side trip to Placerville, California, where I found the family tombstones in the Union Cemetery. So when I came back, I said that if my mom would get those letters out of the closet, that I would take her on a trip to California. And so over the next year, we sorted through all the letters and put our trip together and went in May of 1993. And really, it took us 14 years to put the book together. It was really a labor of love between my mom and I. And it was challenging because the letters were very fragile. Some were written in pencil. Some were written in ink.
So who saved all these letters? Was it her mom?
It was my great-grandmother that saved everything.
So they just kept collecting all these letters, but nobody ever put them in any kind of chronological order to sort of tell the story. And that's what you've done in this book. So what's the biggest difference you uncovered in the way we live today to the way, you know, they lived back then? What was the biggest difference? Or is like the world, people are people no matter when they lived and where they lived?
Well, there are some definite consistent themes, but I think they had some challenges and hardships that we just don't have today.
Right, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
In terms of how transportation, mail, things that we take so for granted were not given back then.
But I think people, you know, you just have to watch an old Western or kind of read a history book to sort of imagine what it was like. But when you actually read the letters, was there anything that was a big surprise to you? I mean, besides the obvious things of not having the same kind of indoor plumbing or refrigeration or you know, possibly good food available to you if you really work hard now these days,
well,
or, you know, things like transportation for sure.
We did believe that this family took really big risks for a better life. When they left Vermont, they had no idea what they would find in Pennsylvania or Illinois or Kansas or California. And they, even though they had many hardships and tragedies, they were very resilient people and they were happy. They enjoyed life. They enjoyed each other. And I think the biggest thing that came out from the book was that family was very important to them, and they were determined to stay connected across thousands of miles and for multiple generations. The book covers 120 years of letters from 1842 to 1962. I think that's quite unique.
Yeah, absolutely, especially for that family. And now, you know, we take so much for granted. I mean, we have our timelines on Facebook. We have our, you know, we have all kinds of things. People do it, you know, they just know exactly what's going on all the time with everybody. We're talking to Mary Jo Sontag, researcher and co-author of Right, If You Live to Get There. You can find a link to her book on our website, MaryLouShow.com. It's a great book, and it's the chronicle of her family's life for 120 years. Okay, so besides being resilient and happy and family-oriented, they had a strength. Do you think that people today could do this? I mean, is this why, you know, we're attracted to watching people struggle in something like Survivor but we would be like far away from being able to do this. I think people are so soft and like wusses today.
Well, I remember when I was taking California history class and hearing that when people would make that journey to the Oregon Trail or wherever they would go from St. Louis all the way to California, it took, you know, about 6 or 7 months to do that, and they would lose about 30% of the people
right.
from cholera and so many hardships along the way. Now, people are afraid to go to Mexico these days.
There were some definite hardships they had to deal with, like the weather, like disease, and could I tell you some stories about
We love stories. Please.
So after they left Pennsylvania, they went to Kansas, and one of the letters says, Kansas ain't much of a place as people say it is. If there was nothing to trouble people but them Indians, then we could live here. The first things that came was them great big worms, and they very near ate up the potatoes. And when they left, the bugs came. They ate up what they wanted and left the rest for us. They kept me and Leafy in the potato patch all day long, finding worms. You bet we smashed the livers out of them. There's nothing in Kansas but grasshoppers and Indians.
Oh.
And what year was that?
When they went to Illinois, they wrote about tornadoes. One day, a tornado came by and struck the general store where JWD was working. He and his cousin jumped under the counter for protection. The whole building went sailing off, leaving the foundation in place and the two men safely under the counter. JWD said, I've had enough of Illinois and tornadoes. And then when they got to Tahoe, they had to deal with snow, blizzards in the wintertime. And there's a letter that said, it soon began to snow and turned into a real blizzard with howling wind. It wasn't long before neither Hetty nor the horse could see anything. They found themselves up on the side of the mountain. Hetty got out and put Johnny in the bottom of the buggy, covering him with a lap rope. She tried to lead the horse down the mountain to find the road without turning the buggy over. Johnny was yelling and crying, I think I'm going to die. I'm going to die. Hetty, with long hair streaming down her back, soaked and frozen to the bone, managed to get back on the road. Finally, they reached home and lived to tell the tale. So I think those are good examples of the kinds of things people had to encounter.
Right, absolutely. How old was Johnny at the time?
Oh, he was just a young boy, like 8 or 9 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And she was a teenager.
Oh, she was a teen. Wow, that's amazing. I love the title, Right, If You Live to Get There.
Well,
if you make it.
In 1869, Jane Waterman, who was my great-grandmother's half-sister, wrote to her and said, I never expect to see you again in time. Give my love to your dear children. How bad they will feel to have you go to Kansas and leave them. Dear sister, write if you live to get there.
So that's where the title came
from. That's where the title came from. And the good news is she did live to get there, and they wrote to each other for the rest of their lives.
So are you surprised that you know, people couldn't do this? I mean, and also, was your family just particularly strong? I mean, it took a lot of, you know, settlers going west to really make the country, you know, get there and do the things that they ended up doing and make the roads and everything else. But is it your family just happened to be really strong stock?
I do believe that, because when they arrived in California, they were very enterprising and played a key role in establishing the Lake Tahoe area. The oldest son created many patents for mining. He ran for General Assembly.
Wow.
And the women in this family were really quite remarkable. There's one who was named Sierra Nevada Phillips. They named her after the mountains that they loved so much. She was 5 feet tall and a bundle of energy, and she ran 3 resorts there in the Lake Tahoe area at Phillips Station, Rubicon Springs, and Meeks Bay. She said that it was said about her that she greeted everybody with a joke and sent them away with a smile, and if she had a fault, it was her overgenerous nature.
Huh.
She was known as the best cook in the Sierra, and she served her guests on linen tablecloths and fine china.
Okay, so they were lucky to get there first and sort of, like, become so entrepreneurial that they were able to have, like, the greatest businesses. Now, I know that you coach leaders worldwide to successfully execute their roles and achieve their potential.
I do.
So I know that you are, like, a life you know, kind of a life coach for these big CEOs and people like that. So what are you seeing? What's the difference? Are people just getting very, it doesn't sound like some of the people you coach could possibly do what some of your ancestors did. Are we just getting soft?
I think these people were very hardy, you know. When they had to face many large hardships and they rose above them, their resort burned down 3 times and they rebuilt it.
Mm-hmm. So they kept going. What are you finding in your work today, working with these big business guys? What are you finding in terms of what they're lacking in terms of their resilience or their kind of, you know, hardiness?
I think that hardiness and resilience makes the difference between successful leaders and not.
Mm-hmm. When you coach people, is that usually what's in question, that they're not calling on that kind of resource, that hardy resource?
Well, I think that's part of it. I also think having a clear vision of direction of where you want to go and what you're trying to accomplish is important as well.
So that was built into the you know, moving east, the west.
I believe so. They had a vision for a better life.
Right,
even
absolutely.
Even though they didn't know what that would be.
Right. So there's something. All right. So when you're counseling these people today, besides being, let's say, a little bit softer or less hardy, is it that they don't have the vision of their company, or is it a question of like a skill set to deal with other people? You know, sometimes when you're all struggling together to survive, then survival outcreates any kind of interpersonal relationships. And when you, when you're running a company, maybe you want to survive, but your interpersonal relationships are kind of interfering with that survival.
Well, that's right. The better your interpersonal skills are, the better you are able to rally people around your vision and direction and get people to collaborate towards the same goal.
So what are some of the things you teach the people that you coach using this background that you have?
Well, I do think that having good interpersonal skills, being able to listen deeply to people, involve people, getting their ideas, empathizing with people when they're in tough situations, providing support to others, I think those are all critical skills for leaders. And people need to know who you are, so sharing your thoughts, feelings, and rationale with them about your decisions, about direction, helps people to feel part of the organization and be able to help the organization be successful.
Oh, that's so great. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. Mary Jo Sontag, researcher and co-author of Right, If You Live to Get There. We'll have the link up at MaryLouShow.com. Really a fascinating study, great book, and I encourage everybody to check it out and maybe take this weekend to get some of your personal letters together as well. Maybe your family has that big old white chest someplace with a bunch of archival information that will help you. Thank you so much for being with us. Mary Jo Sontag. Woo-hoo. Thank you.